Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace.
I'm your host, Sabine M., and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Nadim Stoop. Nadim is Managing Director at PropTech Denmark.
Hi, everyone. I'm speaking today with Nadim Stoop. I hope I pronounce it correctly. Yeah. He shakes his head. Okay-ish. Okay. I figured it might be the Nordic way of saying it, but apparently I was wrong. He's based in Denmark because he works for PropTech Denmark as well. I'm quite excited for this conversation because PropTech is something that's been coming up in my previous conversation continuously, and what the world of PropTech can offer to CRE in this uncertain times. So let's kick it off right away. Hi, Nadim. Can we start by you telling what you do at PropTech Denmark?
Well, my official role is Chief Executive Officer or Managing Director of PropTech Denmark. And we've been live for a little over 2 years, but my role has changed dramatically in that time. We started initially, my role was to raise funding for this not-for-profit initiative. After that, it was using all those funds for something valuable and productive and building a sustainable and long-term platform. And today, my role is to ensure that we use that platform as a launchpad to create awareness of PropTech and PropTech innovation, accelerate real estate adoption of technologies, and generally help stimulate the entire market around technologies and real estate and the built world in general towards an existence where we use technology as an enabler and an opportunity for growth and acceleration.
Maybe just to clarify, because I know, because we talked before, it's not limited to corporate real estate, but it's rather real estate as a whole, property, technology, whatever there might be, whatever who needs it. Who are your typical stakeholders?
Well, so that, I mean, that's a good question. Going back to what you're saying, obviously, you know, there is the whole commercial real estate sector that obviously takes up a lot of space here. But we see PropTech really as an opportunity to think of this from a design-centric approach. And that means that effectively anyone or anything that interfaces with a real estate asset is something that we see is relevant from the PropTech perspective. So obviously, as I mentioned before, we have our stakeholders being commercial real estate. Some of our big partners are also the financial institutions, looking from the mortgage side of things. We also have a lot of operators, FM and so on. Obviously, the entire spectrum of PropTech and PropTech solutions, that is a very, very broad term. And in the last year or so, we've seen a pretty significant surge in interests from owners and operators of real estate that you know, whose core business is not real estate, but that are looking into, you know, acquiring or selling assets, leasing them back, transforming their workplaces so that they can provide or they can transform their workplace into a value add to their employees and not just a place where they come to work.
Yes, but you're focused on Denmark, right? Do you exchange with others as well?
Yeah, I mean, we are obviously born out of Denmark, but the Nordics is, let's be frank, is a small region. So we do and have launched initiatives with our Nordic partners in Sweden and Finland and Norway. And hopefully we'll continue to run a lot of programming across the Nordics because I really believe that together we have a lot to offer.
Yeah, I do want to tap into that geography question later again. I think you can feel it coming, but I wanted to go back quickly. How did you end up in the prop tech world? What's your professional background?
Wow, it's a very difficult question to ask. Sometimes I really don't know. Well, I studied in the UK and the US. I have a background in innovation and business design, tech entrepreneurship, and so forth. And I actually launched my first prop tech startup in London while I was living there. This was before there was a term around PropTech. It would perhaps not, you know, it was on the outskirts of what PropTech is, delivering services into retail and for retail. And that's sort of where it started. And as I sort of evolved into that, I made my move back home to Denmark, where I grew up back in around 16, and made the decision that I was keen to sort of revamp the leasing aspect of real estate and how that was done, improve it, make it more frictionless, increase transparency and bring down friction and risk. And that was such an important eye-opener for me, both in terms of understanding that real estate has a long way to go in terms of the adoption of new technologies. There is a lot of reasons for that, and that gave me a pretty good understanding for why. But at the same time, it also just made me realize how much underutilized value is just latent in real estate and the sector as a whole. So I made the move over to a pan-European developer, and actually was supposed to lead out the digital transformation and the developing of new residential and office-based concepts. But within just 9 months, I was approached by the sort of backbone of what PropTech Denmark wanted to be, with the question, you know, do you want to do this? And actually, my first answer was no. But then having explained to them how I would want to do this, we sort of found some common ground. And before I saw it, I was off doing fundraising again. So yeah, that's how I've ended up here.
So it wasn't really a no, it was a yes and situation.
No, it was effectively no. I don't believe in that approach, but I believe in this one. So if you're open to that, then I'm keen to hear more.
And here we are.
And here we are.
I noted that on your LinkedIn, you have space as a service as one of the key themes that you're supporting. And the purpose of the office has been a hot topic in the past year. Can you explain a little what space as a service means for you?
For me, I think the easy way to look at it is to, there are multiple ways of looking at it. But if I look at it from the commercial real estate side of things, it is about understanding that the responsibilities as an owner operator goes far beyond the simplicity of square meters. This is far, and also cubic feet or cubic meters for that matter. This is about looking at space as an opportunity to provide value. And obviously, if you can do that, you have an opportunity to commoditize that. So effectively, I see space as a service as an opportunity to look at your asset and transform it into a platform for value add. And if you can create value add from a platform, you can commoditize it and generate new income and new opportunities in general.
You mentioned it before, those opportunities oftentimes were not picked upon in the past. Have you seen a change in 2020?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't go so much as saying that it plays into the space as a service movement per se. I would say it is at the early stage of that. I think there's still a pretty big jump from your, you know, corporate real estate that wants to tap into the whole flexible work movement and to your WeWork and the entire machine that is there to operate something like that. But what I do see is in the adoption or the acceptance and the adoption of new solutions towards this flexible environment, slowly these players are going to, if they haven't already realized it yet, they will realize that there is an opportunity for them to tap into a whole different bunch of new opportunities, predominantly that look into health and well-being and productivity. And, you know, if you can build something on top of that, the world's your oyster.
Just had an interesting conversation as well with someone in the corporate real estate industry who said, for him as well, productivity and well-being are the key indicators, and all the other metrics that are out there are just for monitoring purposes.
Yeah, I think that's okay. I mean, that's a good way of looking at it. I'm pretty sure that there is a financial aspect of that that's worth looking at. Whether that comes before, together, or after, you know, I don't think actually is that important. I think these are two very important indicators. And I think, especially when, you know, when you look into this from a workplace transformation point of view, these are going to be what your CFO, what your CEO, what your HR are going to be looking at. Are we making people healthier? Are we bringing down sick leave? Are we Can we see an increase in productivity? I mean, even 1-3% here and there, that's actually something that really has an impact on your bottom line. So definitely, I see that as something that's important. You could argue that the sustainability aspect of it is equally as important. You can maybe argue that some are playing that card because they have to, and not necessarily because they need to. I believe we need to. And prop tech and workplace technologies in general have a big role to play in that discussion, for sure.
I absolutely agree with you. I do think we need to. I'm still very cautious, though, if there's a lot of sustainability talk, because I feel that still a lot of it is greenwashing. And yeah, it's not really.
I mean, it's a difficult one. I think to a certain extent, you're right. I'm not sure if the greenwashing approach is a conscious thing and more of, you know, we want to do better and this is what we can do with what we know. I mean, we here in the Nordics, I feel like we do a lot in the context of trying to make a difference, especially on the sustainability agenda. And, you know, in the past 14 days, I've spoken to at least 2 or 3 substantial workplaces that are looking at transformation. And the sustainability agenda is very much part of that approach. And the reason they reach out to us is to make sure that we can give them some insights into bringing that aboard in their transformation strategy. It's not easy. It is difficult. It requires a lot of complexity. I mean, this would be very easy if you would just say, well, you know, we're going to try to be sustainable, and we're just going to make sure that instead of opening up this side of the office building, we're just going to close it so we don't need to turn on the lights or clean it. But that's just not a sustainable approach. And it doesn't cater into, you know, are you giving your employees a good experience and the productivity aspect of it, let alone the health aspect either. So it is a difficult thing to balance. And it is very much about balancing the technical as well as the experiential aspects of things, and remembering that we need to be problem solvers and at the same time design centric. Difficult worlds to get to meet, because these are two difficult sets of people with difficult ways of looking at the world.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, right? You can always stick to old models and keep things the way they are, or try new things. And sometimes there might be a balance of the two, a trade-off some kind. Now, what I'm really interested in is, which technology will influence the future workplace environment from your point of view?
Oh, it's such a, I mean, I believe all of them. I think it's just a question of how you put them together. I think, you know, looking at the short term, we can already see things like basic things like, you know, how do you book a desk? How do you book workplaces or workspaces? I think things like indoor climate, Corona, COVID has accelerated the need to improve that. And that's, I think, just in the short term. I also strongly believe that on the war on talent, community experience, community engagement are going to play a big role in that. And then you can argue, what is the technology in that? But I believe the technology for success in that is very much in the digital solutions that are available to support that change, and in making, you know, driving the nudging, driving the engagement. I mean, you know, if you're a workspace of some, you know, just 500 people or let alone 2,000 people, you're not going to be able to do that through email. I just don't see it happening. You're going to need to be in the mind frame where people are, with solutions that are engaging, and what's more engaging than LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter? And you're going to have solutions that are designed around a similar premise.
That's interesting. I'm thinking, though, if you look at LinkedIn, something, these things oftentimes get very addictive quite quickly as well. And again, I think it might be striking a balance, because I've heard as well from people that an issue was also that now in remote work, people tend to work longer hours than they would in the office. And then there's a term already, like home working burnout, that's evolving. Do you see technology specifically for well-being emerging as well?
For sure. And I think, I think you're absolutely right. This is, you know, we're at the early stage of this change, and we're not going to nail it in the first go. I don't believe in that. That's why it's so important that we have a data-driven approach to it, so that we can learn, measure, build, or learn, build, measure how we want to move forward. That feedback loop is going to be so important for us in order to recalibrate how we do things. And I think you're right. I think there is the question about, are we, you know, how are we working? Is it a healthy way of working, this being remote? I think it's different. I think you're going to have some, you know, one generation, especially the younger generations, are going to be loving this. This is what I'm hearing. The hard part for a lot of them is not effectively that they don't work well remote. It's that there is no social aspect. And I think that's very much something that everybody's missing. In terms of using solutions that cater to this addictive mindset, yeah, I mean, that is a problem. That is a problem regardless of whether it's workspace or workplace or it's Facebook. And I think we all need to have some serious conversations about how we deal with that. But I don't believe we're going to solve that problem tomorrow or within the next 2, 3, or even 5 years. So, you know, as a workplace provider, you're going to need to accept that you have to be where your employees are, and then you can implement policies or ways of working that are designed to help mitigate that problem. But I don't think we're going to have a problem to the solution per se.
And then in the end, it's like you said, it's a cycle of trying things. And then also, yeah, we need to be responsible for ourselves as well and set boundaries. But that's, yeah, that's also, I think, a cultural shift that has to happen, that we're feeling comfortable with shutting down and being strict on, sorry, no, I don't do a meeting after 6 p.m. and these kind of things. Now, you've said it before, Nordics is a rather small region, but with, in terms of sustainability, and I'm in Switzerland, that's a small region as well. So yeah. In terms of sustainability, you seem to lead the way. Do you see other differences between geographies as well when it comes to prop tech?
Yeah, I think, I mean, not necessarily prop tech alone, digital adoption rate in the Nordics is very high. You know, you just look at something like, you know, acquiring real estate here, acquiring your property is something you can do digitally end to end. So, you know, we have payment services in where you can transfer cash to your friends. You know, this is a direct competitor to Apple Pay here. I think their adoption rate is even higher than Apple Pay. Logging into your bank accounts, sharing your tax returns, all these things are done digitally today. So the digital adoption rate is obviously a huge player of huge importance to all of these technological solutions. And I think that is definitely going to help, at least from the sustainability aspect of things, propel these to become much more mature solutions in their local regions, so that by the time the rest of the world, quote unquote, picks up on the digital adoption, they'll be able to tap into a much more mature product that comes out of the Nordics.
Now, moving this, because you have visibility to different industries as well, do you see a difference in industries?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's obvious. I mean, commercial real estate, with all due respect to my colleagues, we're slow, real slow. And, you know, it's a bit of a love-hate relationship because, you know, on the one hand, the fact that it's so slow is also a massive opportunity. And at the same time, it's like, oh, it's so slow. Can't you see the opportunity just sort of running out through your hands or fingers? And so that's obviously one of them. But if you look at, you know, fintech, I think we're doing well. Medtech, you know, life sciences is somewhere we're excelling very well in terms of technology and innovation. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's what can be said about that. But I sort of think that in terms of commercial real estate or real estate as a whole, digital adoption there is slow. It is a conservative industry. The average age, I think, is a little higher than most other industries, especially here in the Nordics. Up until 10, 15, 20 years ago, this was still very much a market where it was all about buy cheap, sell high, right? Buy low, sell high. So there's also a mentality change that needs to go into that. And that takes time. It takes new generations. It takes new ways of working, new ways of seeing opportunities. But I'm optimistic.
Do you think there are common pitfalls and challenges when it comes to implementing technology in this property sector?
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, I think the obvious ones are just, you know, inertia. And I think the most important one is the lack of willingness to change. The change management, I mean, you look at something like commercial real estate here in the Nordics, especially in Denmark, commercial real estate doesn't have a lot of very, very big players. We have a lot of small players. And the investments that are required to make into making these changes for them doesn't really make sense from where they stand. But at the same time, it's also inhibiting them from tapping into all of the other auxiliary potential that real estate can provide them if they dare to look at it as a platform as opposed to just a static asset. So the change management aspect of it is huge. And I don't think that there is enough investment into A, the digital transformation, and B, change management in general.
And then the other aspect of it is, sorting the words here, when it comes to implementation of the technology, how do you measure the success of it?
Yeah. Well, it all depends on the eyes that sees, right? I mean, if you're leading workspace, right, then in my opinion, you look at the measure of that through things like, as we touched on before, health. Are my employees healthier? Are they more productive? Are we seeing less sick days? Can we see engagement go up? Can we see happiness go up? Are we retaining talent? Are we procuring better talent? These are obvious things. If you're, you know, an owner or developer, you're looking at things like, are we driving up NOI? Are we bringing down our costs? Are we building more sustainably in an efficient way? What are our maintenance fees? You know, there are so many parameters that really require us to look at, you know, who's the benefactor in that particular situation. Personally, I don't believe in a future where real estate is not tech driven. So in my opinion, you know, it's about getting with the program.
And I think the success metrics and the program really should relate to your use case. And from my point of view, you should never get technology for technology's sake, but have a story behind why you need it, because otherwise you won't use it.
Listen, I agree. I mean, when we first started off here in PropTech Denmark, some of the calls that I were getting in the start, and I was getting so many of them, was, oh, can you recommend an app? And I was like, yeah, I can recommend a lot of apps, but I think we need to go back to the drawing board and say, you know, what problem are you actually trying to solve? And, you know, you might find out that you don't even need an app. And that also, you know, it's a good example of where real estate is, because I remember when Apple launched the App Store in the start of, I think, 11 or 12 or something like that, you know, every business out there were going, we need an app, but no one had actually really asked themselves, why do we need one? And this is a bit where real estate is or was just a year or two ago. I don't believe in technology for the sake of technology. I believe that technology needs to be adopted as an enabler for something, be that improving productivity, solving problems, empowering people. But technology for the sake of technology, you know, that's a lot of headache. I mean, it's a lot of headache if you're not getting what you want out of it for the sake of it.
Now, very strong use case and results-driven thing is return to work. What are the technologies that you think organizations should get to support that undertaking?
I think focus on occupancy is going to be important. And that's going to be from two ways of looking at it. One is going to be the occupancy in terms of how do we utilize space from a sustainability agenda. But it's also going to be obviously in terms of, you know, things like booking desks, booking meeting rooms, parking places, and so on. And generally getting an understanding for how is our building being utilized and how can we improve that. I think things like how do we improve or bring down friction at the workplace through technology is going to be important. You know, these are effectively productivity apps or productivity solutions that tie directly into the physical presence of the building. And lastly, things that speak into, you know, the sustainability agenda and the health agenda in general, you know, indoor climate, healthy workplaces, better acoustics, community, all these things are going to play a massive role in this. But I also think it's important to remember that, you know, technology alone cannot do this. I mean, there are so many simple things that can help solve this problem. More green. Investing in greener workspaces alone, you know, that helps with the sustainability aspect. It improves health. It doesn't necessarily need to be a technology-driven solution. It just needs to be a different way of looking at your workplace. And you can obviously use technology to measure how much green your how good the investment was in your green. But I think just having a different approach to looking at our workplace as a as an opportunity to become a value driver for your employees, that's a really good way to start. And looking at your existing workplace as a problem that you need to solve for the sake of XYZ, that will lead you back to the technologies or solutions that you need.
Very tangible problem is how to determine future space demand now, because we don't have any experience of what's going to be the adoption rate of flexibility models, how much are people coming back to the office. And then based on that, you would need to do office planning. So my question to you would be, which data do you think should organizations gather to come nearer to an answer to that question?
It's a very difficult question because it's so much complexity in that question or in any answer that can answer that question. But I think, you know, obviously a combination of occupancy is super important, but equally as much also in well-being and engagement. Are the employees happy in the way we're working? Can we see it in the way that they're engaging with each other and with the work they're being provided? And how does that tie into how are they utilizing office space and maybe even, you know, remote space? So I'm sure there are people out there way more intelligent than me that can, you know, look towards putting all that data together and come up with something clever. But my answer to that is a combination of those three.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I do think as well it will be a combination of things, but in the end, it can't be too fancy, right? It needs to boil down to something pragmatic that you can live throughout the years and that you can continuously replicate, because if you can only do that exercise once, it's not going to help you in the end as well.
Yeah, and I think just having a flexible workspace mentality is about much more than just saying, oh, we're going to let people work from home or work from anywhere. It's equally as much as looking into the, you know, the amenities and the building as a whole and saying, you know, be that, you know, furniture or how we're using parking or how we're letting people work. Having flexible mentality is about much more than just where are you working. It's also about how are you enabling your workspace to be flexible. So that could be like, you know, we're going to move around our furniture once every other month because we can actually see that this way of working is better. So things like having flexible walls or thinking modular in your way of putting up meeting rooms, that equally as much ties into the flexible workspace movement.
What I find an interesting question as well is if you go flexible and you allow as well your employees to A, work from home and then also to work from other locations that are probably not your own, not yours leased, but like a third party provider was right. How do you get the same data from there as well? Because you want to be able to analyze the usage there and the well-being in the same way that you do in your own office spaces to compare it. Do you have any insights into that, how co-working is preparing for that kind of things?
It's going to be a difficult one, right? I think my experience is that I think co-working is going to come through this really, really well. We can already see here that, you know, part of wanting to make that flexible workplace strategy is equally as much about giving your employees alternative places to work. I think, you know, there are some co-working providers out there that are investing so massively into acquiring data from their workspaces and supposedly have the people to back the science of that data that I'm sure that they will find ways to maximize how they want to provide their services, at least when it comes to the occupancy side of things. And I think, you know, I also believe that commercial real estate needs to take a page out of that book and start thinking that way and invest, not just acquiring the data, but also being able to use it and model on it and come up with new solutions that they can advise their customers or slash tenants on. So that's sort of the best answer I can give to that because it's a very difficult question.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting a definite answer for any of those. So all good. Now is your opportunity to get what you want, actually, because my next question, we touched upon a lot of problems and challenges out there currently. But if you could magically solve any of those issues, what would it be? Or a different issue?
That's such a good question. And I've really thought about that for a long time. I think, you know, I don't think that my answer to that cannot be something super narrow. I think, you know, we have an opportunity here within the commercial real estate space or the real estate space in general to make massive impact in the sustainability agenda. And I know it's a super difficult task, but we also have a very, very big part to play in the problem as it is. So, you know, if I were to sort of pick something, I would rather say, you know, any solutions or technologies that can help drive down CO2 emissions or accelerate the adoption of technologies that improve our built world, not just around sustainability in general, but around, you know, everything in the UN 17 goals, right? And try to improve the way we work and live. And that obviously, with the problems we have today, starts with the environment. And I think that we as an industry need to massively invest into that. And we need to support all of the technological solutions that are out there to help them win forward, because we need to play the long game.
I absolutely agree. Just over the weekend, I overread a discussion again on, there was actually in Germany, the discussion on the sustainability agenda as well. And politicians keep pushing it out because there is an election this year and it's an unpopular conversation to have. But the jurisdiction actually ruled that they can't do that anymore because it will impair future generations' freedom and living conditions. And those must be regarded. I find that a very interesting ruling, actually.
Yeah, I read that too, actually. And I was positively shocked. I think, I mean, not to get into too much of the politics here, but I definitely think that it's an important win. And it's something that needs to be modeled in most countries. We need to play the long game on this. And unfortunately, you're looking at the generations that this is affecting in the long term. And they actually will end up becoming or are the minority when it comes to the decision making on these things. So I think it's an excellent start. And I'm hoping that that we'll see a lot of similar rulings everywhere else.
Yeah, but taps nicely into your magical wish for being more in for the long game and the long-term results.
Magical being the key word, right? We'll take one miracle at a time here.
Yeah. I didn't limit it to just one wish. So yeah, in the magic world, everything's possible.
I'm just trying to be realistic.
Now, I have a final question, and that would be, who else should I have on this podcast? And is there something you would like to ask them?
I think it could be interesting taking another Dane that's been in this space for a long time. It could be interesting to have Peter Ankerstjerne. He's the CSO at Planon and the chairman at IFMA. A really good guy that we have a lot of interaction with here. He's been around this space for years and has a lot of really interesting things to say on it. In terms of what to ask him, give him something difficult, something that he hasn't answered before or that he likes to dodge or something like that.
No, I think that's a great suggestion. I think I watched his presentation for IFMA at the beginning of the year, and he had some really interesting points in there as well. So thank you very much, Nadim. That was insightful. And yeah, let's hope that PropTech will prosper and make our lives better.
Well, let's hope so. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. We have just released a study on corporate real estate in Europe that you can download. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.